Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 118 for January 31st, 2008.
Rated T for Teen.
Sierra Entertainment proudly presents World in Conflict, the most intense strategy game ever created. 5 out of 5, easily one of the best gaming experiences of 2007. GameSpy.com. 9.5 out of 10, GameSpot.com Editor's Choice. A PC Gamer Editor's Choice Award winner, 93%. IGN.com's 94% Editor's Choice. War is coming home. World in Conflict. Available now for the PC.
I'm your host today, Chuck Osborne, Senior Executive Editor here at the PC Gamer Ranch. We are joined today by Senior Editor Logan Decker.
I'm feeling fantastic.
Senior Associate Editor Dan Stapleton.
I'm feeling merely adequate.
Our Senior Executive Intern Norman Chan.
I got a cold.
Former EIC Gary Witta.
I'm feeling pretty good.
And our producer, Jeremy Williams, out in Chicago.
I'm feeling stupendous.
Later in the podcast, Dan will be talking with Blair Fraser, the producer at Ironclad, which is making Sins of a Solar Empire, which is the 4X strategy game that's going to be coming out in about 4 days, right?
It's not 4X. It's real-time strategy with 4X elements.
Ah, okay.
Gotcha.
Excuse me.
How could you be so wrong?
You can't ever.
How can anything we ever say on this podcast turn out to be wrong?
I'm like the king of wrong. Oh, well, we'll get to that in a moment, my friend. But first of all, we do have some bittersweet news this week. This is going to be Jeremy's last PC Gamer podcast as our producer. Jeremy, would you like to explain to everyone why?
Is this where I play the sad music? Yeah.
As your last act,
can you just splice in a moment of silence because we're in a bit of a hurry?
Nice. Well, as some of the listeners guessed, when I was in town in California, I was actually there interviewing for a job, which I have since accepted. And I'll be working right around the corner from the PC Gamer crew, so it'll be fun. That's the upside of it. The downside is, of course, my job here on the podcast has to come to a close. So after 18 episodes of this one.
Yep.
I'm calling it quits, and it's been a blast.
Now, it is a job at Future, so he's not working at the building around the corner. He's working around the corner within the building.
Mere feet from the PC Gamer crew.
Spitting distance.
And you're actually bringing the family with you, right?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Well, you know, I have to say that's a good thing because, you know, you have a new baby now, and in San Francisco, there is no better city in which to sell your baby for crack.
Whoa.
So, you know.
Oh, I'm sure there's a better city.
My goodness.
Well, I think we're one of the leaders, really, in crack technology. Dan, as was pointed out by some of our readers and listeners, we didn't quite pay that good of attention to the press releases that we were reading last week.
Wait, we're talking about other stuff other than my departure today?
Yeah, what?
What, is this all supposed to be about you?
Where are you going?
Dan has an interview coming up? I thought we were talking about me the whole show. All right.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, that's going to be a pretty short podcast.
Yeah, Chuck did forget to pimp the interview.
I didn't.
No, he did.
No, he.
Oh,
said,
that's
he,
right.
He
okay, you're right. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. See, I'm doing this whole being wrong thing again.
This is episode one of the podcast.
I'm sorry. Continue.
All right. So anyway, to recap, Sins of a Solar Empire. Later in the interview, Jeremy is leaving. This is the last one,
Poo-hoo.
And Dan is a moron because what?
Hey, it's not entirely my fault. As I recall, you received this press release as well.
You know,
this is going to be a rough one.
But I was leaving the press release reading to you because I like to delegate.
Buckle up your seatbelts.
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, the Stalker Clear Sky follow-up to Stalker is actually not going to be digital download only. Why did I just use that expression? I just said we shouldn't use digital download in the magazine anywhere, because all downloads are digital. And now I just said digital download. Okay, so
it's infectious.
Yeah.
Digital distribution.
Digital distribution only. It will not be digital distribution only. There is actually a retail release, though we still don't know who's actually publishing it. Not retail. But the press release we got from Steam was saying, you know, it came in like 5 minutes before the podcast, and we looked at it and said, you know, Stalker Clear Sky, Steam exclusive, which apparently means something different than what we thought it does. Ooh, interesting topic. Let's talk about the implications of that. Didn't notice they slipped in a little thing, and at retail. So our apologies for that. We correct the record this week.
Yeah, it's good. It's good news. I mean, great that it'll get a retail release as well. I mean, that's awesome.
Exactly. So second on our list of corrections, and we hope to keep our you know, things that we'll need to correct for next podcast to a minimum this time. But the Battlefield Heroes, based on a press release that did not have the information that that all of the upgrades you can buy will be purely cosmetic. Which surprised me, and you know, this kind of goes back to an earlier podcast where I was saying that EA seems to be getting it a little bit more under their new management. So the fact that they're not charging people for for, you know, upgrades that would actually give them a real advantage in gameplay, maybe this is a step in the right direction for them. So I was wrong on that with my speculation. Norm, why didn't you know that?
I'm glad we have that recorded. Dan says,
"Yeah, I'm just saying that's one for the ages." There. Yeah.
Hey, I say I'm wrong all the time when I'm proven wrong. Unlike
I say
some people,
all the time too.
First time I've ever heard it.
I'm never wrong when I'm arguing with you, Gaz.
I don't know. I can't imagine actually paying money just to have like a different shirt or something.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't understand why they're doing it for something that nobody in their right mind would ever pay for. I mean, why they bothered to put this together?
Because if it was a Sims-like game, you know, where people were online all the time, you know, it might make some sense. But for a game like Battlefield, I don't know.
Yeah. And in the Sims, you've got nothing better to do than worry about your character's hair. But in Battlefield, you've got fools to shoot. So
yeah, that's the least of my concerns, is whether I'm wearing pants or not.
Yeah, I can't imagine myself buying this. And there was a quote, and I think a Joystick article that one of our forum posters pointed out to us that no, you're wrong. that the EA developer was saying we expect, you know, 95% of people to never buy anything here, which seems like an interesting investment for them.
But the margins on the other 5% of people, oh,
right?
Pure
well,
profit.
I think they're expecting most of the money from this to come from ad revenue.
So anyway, I guess we can talk about the news of the week, starting with some pretty bad news for the New York Giants fans. EA has done their playtest using Madden NFL 08 to predict the outcome of the Super Bowl, and it turns out that the New England Patriots are going to win the score is going to be 38-30, according to them.
And they're usually right.
A good game, at least.
But how are the commercials?
Yeah.
Do they say anything about the commercials?
It doesn't simulate the commercials, unfortunately.
Lame.
So there you have it. No reason to watch.
I already knew that.
I liked that one commercial with the squirrels.
Well, I also like the cat herding one too.
Have the commercials really been that good in recent years?
Not since the .com bubble burst.
Yeah.
But there's still the place to premiere like movie trailers, and I mean they're still expensive. What is it, like $2.7 million for a 30-second ad
from Toshiba?
That's right.
Moving right along. FutureMark, which has been making the 3D Mark, PC testing software?
It's benchmark.
Yeah, it's benchmark software.
Benchmarking software. They are finally getting into the game making business, which is good news. I think based on their last couple of benchmarking software, which has had some incredible visuals. Anyway, they've formed the FutureMark Game Studio.
Well, the thing is with FutureMark. I think back with Future Mark 3, Mark 01, they used the Remedies Max Payne engine, right? And then they developed their own proprietary engine for 03 and 05, but they've also had a lot of criticism online because people say that their engine, the demos, the benchmark demos, aren't representative of real games, and that NVIDIA and ATI can skew their drivers just to get higher 3D Mark benchmark numbers. So now that they're going to actually have a real game tied to their new engine, and the screenshots that they released today look amazing, you know, their benchmark can be more credible.
Well, wait, the screenshots they released today were not for the game. It was
for the new benchmark.
It was for the new benchmark, yeah. Future Mark 08, yeah.
3D but
Mark.
These are guys that were, you know, I believe that were with Remedy at one time, and yeah. then they spun
off. Yeah,
because
I was going to say, presumably they would need some designers, because, I mean, yeah. all they really do right now is the technology.
Right. Yeah. So that's great news, you know. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to whip up. You know, in their defense, yeah, it is a synthetic benchmark, and that, and you can sort of optimize your drivers to please 3D Mark, but you know what, they're still on a level... You know, both companies are still on an 11-level playing field, and it's still a good metric of how fast a system can run and what it's capable of. Plus, it's beautiful to watch. You can download it for free over at FutureMark. But by the way, a limited version is available at FutureMark.com of 3D Mark 06. Check it out. Try it for yourself.
But I mean, I don't really understand how NVIDIA and ATI could tweak their drivers to make this run better, but not games that use the same technology. I mean, aren't these stress tests built to test out how well your hardware will run technology that is used in games?
Well, the idea is real-world benchmarks, you know, will take into account all the different factors, you know, how, you know, many different things going on at the screen at the same time with multiple players, you know, the rise and fall of frame rates within a game, that kind of thing.
Right, so I guess it's not simulating things like AI or connectivity to other players. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
I still think, you know, when you're comparing one machine to another, it's still a good benchmark. It's still a good comparison point.
I don't know if the last 3D Mark had this in it, but I remember at least maybe it was two ago. It actually had a game built into it where you could drive a buggy around a snowy landscape.
That was a while ago. Wow.
So they have a little bit of game design experience, even if they didn't bring Remedy on. I'm still kind of skeptical, though, because as cool as their benchmarks look, they always had this very kind of stilted feel to them. The characters never moved like they do in a game. It all felt very much like an animation. So,
well, yeah, it was. Absolutely.
I know a lot of people like that. You could say it's kind of ultra-realistic in that way, you know?
Well, I think it's because, you know, they didn't hire the top-tier... animators. They hired the top tier programmers, right? Yeah. All the graphics designers.
Yeah.
But they did
it's
look
a
amazing.
Different
for the
skill
time.
Set, I guess.
Yeah.
I hope they do one with squirrels.
Mm.
Oh boy.
So next story. Good news for small time developers and even big developers, I guess. Valve has released Steamworks, which is going to be game publishing tools for developers and publishers, and is the same tools that they used for Half-Life 2 and the Orange Box.
So, like, by tools, are they the? They're not, it's not like level editing stuff that has already been out. I mean, the Source SDK has been out for years. So this is.
I think it's just all the stuff you need to distribute a game. You know.
It's like a complete suite of all the publishing and development tools that you would need. It includes, like, you know, the ability to record real time stats on sales, gameplay, and activations, and
so it's all behind it's all the behind the scenes business stuff that allows
all the stuff
allows
you
for online
do,
distribution,
and it's all for free.
Yeah, it lets you put VOIP in the games and integration into like Steam. I think it does like Steam achievements.
Multiplayer matchmaking as well, social networking services.
That's the big thing, is that now any third party without any involvement from Valve can actually basically behave like a Steam app, where you can shift tab and chat and join other people's multiplayer games right out of the box.
Right. So, although they're still not, you know, giving away the Source engine. So
right.
That's still not free, but the rest of it is.
You know, we mentioned this earlier in the week already on the Game 3 podcast, but I think it bears repeating, doesn't it? Am I the only person who's amazed at the at way Valve just constantly seems to be beating Microsoft at their own game? Like, Steam is already a more robust and interesting online platform than Windows Live, which should be the one that's the best and the most advanced.
Absolutely. I mean, Microsoft should be really embarrassed, I think, by how Valve, an independent company, you know, and in comparison much smaller than Microsoft, has been able to one-up them like this.
But I think they succeed because they are a much smaller company. And there's less bureaucracy, and they don't have to take into consideration, you know, pimping Windows and getting it to work flawlessly. Yeah, it's just a different type of company culture.
Right, and we've talked about this several times before, but just how badly Valve is beating Microsoft at their own game here. Although some of our readers listeners have pointed out that we are neglecting Xfire, which also does a lot of the same things, but not, I don't think it does it quite. It's not as tightly integrated as Steam is with a lot of games. I actually haven't used it very much. I used it a little bit, but didn't really grow on me. But Steam,
it just amazes me, particularly though, given that Microsoft has done so well on the Xbox side, because Xbox Live is so good and it has so many innovations, and they've done such a good job of growing that biosphere and supporting it and adding new stuff all the time. I don't understand why it's been such a hassle for them to just basically bring the same stuff over to Windows. What's so difficult?
I think it's completely relative. With the Xbox Live stuff, I think it's great because there was nothing else like that on the console side. But on the PC side, we expect a whole lot more. We expect, you know, server browsing stuff.
But there's still nothing like what Xbox 360 offers, really. I mean, not something that's as robust as that.
Because it's not the closed system that Live is on Xbox.
It does have most of the same features, except that they're just executed poorly. For example, you have to actually have a game going before you can be invited into that game. Unlike Xbox, where if you just turn on the Xbox, somebody can see you and invite you into their game. Which, you know, it's nowhere near as smooth a process. But you know, one thing that kind of, I think a lot of it has to do with Microsoft still not taking gamers all that seriously, because I've been using Windows Vista for a year now, and you know, I don't have any real objections to it. I guess there are some benchmarks that suggest it's slower. I haven't really run into a but I haven't really run into a whole lot of problems with my system, which is fairly high end. But the one thing that I just actually noticed this. A week and a half ago, but how the start menu in Vista, if you push the Windows key, you can just type the name of an application and it'll pop up and you can launch it like that. It's like there's an application called Launchy. It's an open source free thing that you can get for XP that does the exact same thing, but the way Windows Vista handles games is to, you know, put them all into the Vista Game Explorer. You know, it's got this whole separate little ghetto for games, really. And if you just want to launch your game by hitting the Windows key and typing the name, that doesn't work. It works for every other application, but not games.
Crazy.
And that's like, why not? Why
would they separate? When you called it a Windows ghetto, I imagine Jeremy taking his baby there and, you know.
Sewing him for a baby.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Like virtual crack.
Yeah,
for Windows Vista Ultimate extras that don't exist.
Ooh, ouch! There's actually no question that Windows Vista is slower than XP in games. We found that out in this month's system benchmarks. It's taking on an epic fail proportion here.
Well, I mean, we knew it before that.
Yeah,
this is yet another set of
no question anymore. It's not a controversy. You know, right. And I don't know what Service Pack 1 is going to do, but,
it's sad.
After all the, you know, the promises the just promises. Aren't being kept, you know, that's the way it is. Very sad.
Well, and even potentially sadder news this week. So the Grand Theft Auto San Andreas class action lawsuit has finally been settled. And there is a website up now where if you were traumatized by the hot coffee content in Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, you can get up to $35 back.
Yeah. So if you were traumatized because you installed this game, sought out, downloaded, and installed the hot coffee mod, and then went into the game and purposefully went to see that content, if that scarred you...
I'm blind!
That's what's great about it. To this money.
Now, don't you think it's ironic in light of the lawsuit that the sub game was called Hot Coffee? It's like they kind of looked into the future and knew they were going to get sued, and so named the game after one of the other great ridiculous lawsuits of our time.
That was the mod name, I think.
It actually was not. Yeah, it was the mod name that was named that, and it was called that because when you go into the sex scenes in the game, the woman invites you in for hot coffee.
I know, but I'm just saying it's ironic because, you know, remember that woman at McDonald's who poured the hot coffee on herself? It's like going into, like you say, you make a good point about how you have to really go out of your way to download this content. You can't accidentally see it. It's not like Janet Jackson's nipple at the Super Bowl where you saw that, you know, whether you wanted to or not. You know, this really is like going into McDonald's, ordering a cup of like scalding hot coffee, deliberately pouring it all over your head, and then demanding some compensation for it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is there a notification on the cup saying not to pour it on your head?
Well, they have. I mean, that's just. I mean, legally now they have to do that. Warning: this hot coffee is hot. Do not pour all over yourself, or you might get burned.
But really,
warning: sky blue.
The correct comparison would be like there'd be a million people who went into McDonald's and ordered hot coffee and happily poured it on themselves and had a joyous time doing so. But there was a lawyer watching who said, "We can make a lot of money over this."
Now, the scary thing is there are different levels of compensation. If you can prove that you bought the game, you can get something up to like $37 back. If you cannot, however, if you have no proof that you bought the game, you can still be entitled to up to $5 in compensation.
Yeah, that's what kills me. It's like, yeah, I saw it. Yeah, here's $5.
Can you?
It's a great compensation.
I thought you needed a paper receipt for $35. You needed a credit card.
No, there's the lowest tier is like $5.
Yeah, the lowest tier is $5 for no proof at all. All you have to do is sign up.
No disk or purchase details.
I remember when zip drives were eating up everybody's data and destroying it. The class action settlement gave you a $15 coupon for another zip drive.
So this is actually a situation in which piracy can pay, because if you pirated the game, you can actually get $5 for having done it.
I don't think you even need to have done that. I mean, you could have been over at somebody else's house watching it. There's a legal way to be a jerk about this.
I
just like to discourage anybody from actually taking them up on this, just because it's terrible.
Yes.
That's what annoyed me most.
That is the insane thing about this, though. Morning, if this was just in the game and you could accidentally ever come across it, I can see the validity of that lawsuit. But given that you really had to go out of your way and download things and have some kind of technical know-how, you really had to seek this thing out to then turn around and say, well, I'm offended by that. Give me some money. It's just everything that's wrong with America, surely.
Right. I actually have a copy of that Grand Theft Auto, like the first edition right here. And you know, the mature 17 plus thing on here says blood and gore, intense violence, strong language, strong sexual content, and use of drugs. Would you really be surprised by softcore porn in something that says strong sexual content and is not recommended for anybody under 17? An NC-17 movie can have much worse, much more graphic than this. And still, you can see it if you're 17. I don't understand that double standard.
And it's not even softcore porn if they're fully clothed, is it?
No, they're not fully clothed.
They are fully clothed.
I guess there's a further patch that adds in textures.
The thing that
I wonder how big a hit Take-Two will wind up taking on this, because you've got to ask yourself how many people will really bother to sign up for this suit, especially the majority of people. Even legitimate people that bought the game and were offended for whatever reason probably still don't have their receipt or proof of purchase from a game they bought, you know, a few years ago. So they're only going to be, you know, able to get in at the $5 level. Are people really going to do that?
I hope not.
I hope not.
Well, the thing is, I believe that, and this is true, I think, of most class action settlements, the money has already been put aside. So if a certain number of, you know, people apply for it and the money runs out, that's it. That's all they're giving out. But if not as many people apply for the rebates, actually people may get more than that because the money has to be dispersed. Because the money has already been set aside by the court.
So the money won't go back to the company then?
No, it will not. Not as I understand it. I could be mistaken, but I usually am not.
Now, in our
except
in
when
our
you host Cat Fantastic,
especially not then. Yeah.
In our March issue, there is an ad for this this settlement, you know, telling you where to go to collect on it. People have posted in our forums saying, you know, shame on you for publishing this. First of all, once again, we do not see any of the ads before they go in the magazine, so we're as surprised as you are when something like that shows up. Also, the ad was placed by Rockstar. So as part
and
of
and this is and that's part of their legal obligation, isn't it, to make people aware of the fact that they can sign up for a suit,
right? So it's not like we want people to take advantage of this offer.
Don't shoot the messenger. So moving right along to possibly happier news, I suppose. Chair Entertainment has acquired the interactive rights to the Ender's Game series. So that's Orson Scott Card's famous novel about was it now like a teenager?
Don't give it away.
is it a secret? I thought everybody knew by now what the plot was.
So why is Cher publishing this? Why is Cher publishing it?
No, actually, it's Cher.
She's a big fan.
All right, yeah. I thought, I had no idea.
Well, she wanted a way to turn back time. And the only way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't read the books, so don't spoil anything here.
I actually have not read the book either. I'm just wondering if the game is going to be as anti-gay as the author is, but you know.
I was pretty surprised at the end with the whale thing. I didn't realize the whale had come back.
Oh, you gave it all away.
Oh my god.
I'm excited for this. I obviously, every science fiction nerd who's read the book has thought, why haven't they made this game yet, even in the mod community? And so I'm psyched. I think it has so many great ideas that could make for a fantastic gameplay.
Well, hopefully it'll get, you know, the loving care any you know great science fiction franchise needs to you know have a good game, unlike Star Trek, which keeps getting screwed.
Hey, did you ever play Rama game? That was fantastic. It was what
Rama had a game
from the manga? it was a fantastic adaptation of a fascinating, you know, story. Where, because you know the story is big, a mysterious object parks itself in Earth orbit, and they go up there and they find this. It doesn't appear to be inhabited by any sentient beings, but it's got a whole
spoiler.
Well, no. You know this like right off the bat, because basically the whole book is about them exploring the ship and finding a complete ecology inside this world, and you're trying to pick up clues in the game to who created this world and why, and you actually have to learn different numeric systems to solve puzzles in the game. It was fantastic.
I believe that was the Genesis planet from Star Trek.
Just thinking that they did that in Star Trek 4. They had the big thing that
no, that was the one with the whale.
But it had that big log in space that parks.
That's exactly what it looked like. Yeah. I think it was, 2 billion years ago. I think it was in mid-90s, something like that. It was a long time ago. But you can still find it on eBay. Highly recommended from...
It sounds like they ripped it off from Star Trek 4.
So Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4, just a little bit here, you know, from both.
The Genesis planet was in... No, yeah, the Genesis planet was in
Star
Trek 3.
Yeah, Genesis planet was Star Trek 3.
And well, the Genesis 2. Device was in Star Trek 2.
Right, but the Genesis planet was created
at the
end of Star
Trek 3.
Star Trek
3 did not exist. It didn't happen.
Yes, it did.
No, Star Trek 3's got some good bits in it.
I like Star Trek 3.
Stealing the Enterprise was pretty cool. Star Trek 3 was pretty bad, but without it, you wouldn't have Spock back.
And the Genesis planet graphics were developed by who?
You?
Pixar.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah, that was the first computer graphics in a movie, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, actually, it wasn't. Young Sherlock Holmes was the first one.
No, the last Starfighter, surely.
That was the first 3D model. The Young Sherlock Holmes was
the last man?
No, it was the first time it had been integrated with live action, but Star Trek, the Star Trek Genesis project was the first, like, 3D modeled images in a movie.
Wait, what about the last Starfighter that had entire space battles in computer graphics?
Were we just saying about me being right?
It happens once in a blue moon.
I think it's come to an end.
It was that all right. As well it lasted.
Your reign of rightness is over. So, in very optimistic news, a Chinese a magazine, I believe it's a Chinese magazine, Keijing Magazine, is reporting that NetEase, which is a Chinese online game operator, is going to be launching Star Trek, not Star Trek, sorry, got Star Trek in the mind, StarCraft Online, which is supposedly in development at Blizzard. And this was leaked online. Whether or not there is any news, any truth to it or not, I don't know.
Very flimsy. I mean,
Blizzard isn't satisfied with their billion-dollar take from last year.
Well, you know, I mean,
well, would you be?
Yeah, we could do two.
Right. Yeah, why not have $2 billion?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, once again, there's nothing solid on a StarCraft MMO. Blizzard is, you know, totally tight-lipped about it. We all think they'd be crazy if they weren't working on something like that, but you know, they haven't said anything to us about it. So there's really nothing to confirm this. It could be some, and like there were people predicting they were going to announce StarCraft MMO when they announced StarCraft 2. So
right,
who knows?
But I mean, this would make sense though. You know, you release StarCraft 2, you get interest in the franchise, you know, up again. And
oh, yeah.
Then when World
yeah,
of Warcraft
prop up
starts
that
to
waning
wane,
interest.
Yeah, then you unleash StarCraft Online.
Well, it's what they did with Warcraft. I mean, they did Warcraft 3, and then they did World of Warcraft. So and they have said that it was like specifically they were planning World of Warcraft while they were working on Warcraft 3, and they worked in some new gameplay elements and like the RPG stuff. And all this other stuff, just all like the other extra characters and things like that, to get people more and more into the fiction to bring it all, you know, to fruition in World of Warcraft. So they could very well be doing the same model again, because it obviously worked rather well.
I think it's really difficult to predict. You know, there's an argument to suggest that, you know, that StarCraft Online could cannibalize their existing Warcraft universe. One of the Penny Arcade articles recently was theorizing that the next gen MMO that they're recruiting for right now, you know, this big mysterious thing, is really just going to be kind of a graphical overhaul and refresh for the existing World of Warcraft, because they were making the argument when a game is that big, you know, you don't do anything else other than just keep it going and keep it fresh, which, you know, I think there's some validity to that theory. And I think some of the reason why we keep going on about StarCraft MMO is because that's kind of what secretly we all want the most. Like, that's the one that sounds the most exciting. But if I have a horrible feeling it would not be a StarCraft MMO, as much as I desperately want that, I don't think that's what they're doing.
But I mean, it just makes the most sense. I mean, they found their largest success ever with an MMO, and they have three franchises. So,
What about this argument that they would just cannibalize their own user base?
I don't think they would as much, especially if they. I mean, they're going to do another MMO one way or another. They're going to do another one because WoW can't go forever. People will get tired, even if they refresh the graphics and even if they refresh the gameplay a little bit. People will get a little bit tired.
Dispute that theory. There's what precedent is there to suggest that this game can't go forever? Dealing with a game that has no precedent in terms of the size of its user base and its popularity,
the last two popular MMOs, and they were the biggest thing ever at their time. But the precedent is
not to this degree.
I think they'll continue on, but I mean, it's kind of like, you know, there's still people playing Ultima Online. There's still people playing the original EverQuest, not at the same numbers.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting they're going to cut it off. They're going to cut it off. I mean, it's still going to be huge among people with low end systems, and people that are just so invested in their characters. But that doesn't mean that they can't also do a StarCraft Online for people like me that are just not that into fantasy, that love science fiction. There are a lot of us out there. I think, and you know, StarCraft is one of the hugely recognizable franchises out there, and especially in Asia. I mean, there's a huge untapped market there for people that love science fiction stuff.
And you know, so, I guess the argument to be made, and the other argument to be made against cannibalization, is that although there might be some players that would just switch over to StarCraft, I imagine you just get a lot of players that would just have two subscriptions and keep playing Warcraft because they're so invested in it. And instead of playing Warcraft every night, they just play StarCraft, you know, Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays, or whatever, and Warcraft the rest of the week.
Pay for two subscriptions,
and they're still paying. Yeah,
but even if they only pay for one subscription, what's the big deal? You're taking a dollar out of your left pocket and putting it in your right. You're still getting their money.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're still getting new users too, because we know there are plenty of people like us.
I mean, I think that's what I would do. I mean, I don't really play World of Warcraft so much anymore, but I think if they'd have hit me at the time that I was like most into World of Warcraft, I wouldn't have abandoned it for StarCraft Online. I think I would have found a way to play both, and I just would have paid them twice as much money.
Right, but look at it this way. A couple of years down the line, by the time... I mean, they haven't even announced any future MMO project yet. A couple of years down the line when they do, then... You know, people will be. I mean, Warcraft may, WoW may even start declining in population instead of continuing to grow. It just hit 10 million, so it can't grow forever.
Right, and they are obviously taking the long term view in terms of, you know, what can we be bringing to market in 3 years when we think this is going to plateau or whatever. That's what they're working on to that.
I want to clarify that. Everybody wants to get in on that. Everybody wants to.
I was like, who the hell is that guy?
A testosterone. Gaz, are you going to clarify it?
Oh, have you met RoboGaz? Yeah.
We're waiting.
That's scary.
Do it. Do it.
I don't like it.
Everybody wants to get in on that. A testosterone fueled parade of manliness.
Me. Well, thank you.
It is. Oh, yes. No, is this the soundboard?
Fairly serious.
I told. I gave very specific instructions that was not fairly ever to be brought to existence.
Which meant, of course, we had to do it.
Oh right. Yeah. One of our listeners, Hojo the Great, whipped this up earlier this week and sent it over to us, and it is awesome.
Former editor in chief Jeremy Williams.
Play the chip one.
Buy some chips. Joe, no, I don't really want any chips. Joe, no, I don't really want any chips.
I don't like this at all. They went the easy way. They went the easy way.
World of PC gaming news.
So you can be good. Replaced.
You know what? The thing is, it's not very good, though, is it? It doesn't sound like you've got some choice quotes in there. It just sounds like random stuff.
Quite a phrase.
That sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to form sentences.
I'm sure it will be able to grow and expand as you continue to talk. It's an organic soundboard.
That's right.
All right, so now let's go to Dan, who's going to be talking with Blair Frazier, producer at Ironclad, about Sins of a Solar Empire.
So we're here talking with Blair Frazier, the producer for Sins of a Solar Empire. How you doing, Blair?
How you guys doing? Doing good.
Great. So just to start off really quick, we've had some producers on before, but a lot of our listeners don't quite understand what a producer does. Can you give us a quick idea what it is that you do for Sins?
Well, I'm probably the worst possible example because I've got a lot of roles here. But I guess one of the primary roles is just to make sure that everybody's on schedule, they know what their tasks are, and I coordinate a lot of the communication with Stardock, our publisher, and it's basically just keeping the machine moving.
Right. So what other roles are you doing?
I do a lot of game design, and I do a lot of AI programming, helping out with...
Jack of all trades.
Marketing material, basically anything that needs to be done.
Right. All right, so now that everybody knows exactly who we're talking to, why don't you give us a rundown on Sins and what's so great about it?
Well, Sins is basically described by our beta testers as kind of a combination of Total Annihilation meets Homeworld meets Galactic Civilization. And it's an RTS, but we're moving it into the 4X realm, the grand strategy where you think about things and you take time and you've got the time to do those sort of things, but then you can zoom right in and you can get involved in the tactical nitty-gritty and watching the combat and deciding how they're going to destroy the enemy, but then you can pull back out and handle all the imperial decisions like where's the best place for my trade ports and which planet should get what investment and all the really cool high-level stuff. And right. Sins is basically the first game that really brings that all together in real time with full multiplayer and avoids a lot of the old problems with the old 4X games.
Right, and 4X stands for Explore, Exploit, Exterminate, and what was the fourth E? I forget.
Or Expand. Fourth E.
Expand, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's like an empire builder, but you're doing it in real time. So
exactly.
Like if anybody's played Galactic Civilizations, think about that with like RTS unit management. And you've got the general idea. Like you managed to meld in a lot of the 4X stuff, like the diplomacy, the trade, the culture. How did you decide like how many things to pull from a 4X game and put them into the RTS game, and you know, where was the cutoff where it became too much management and not enough action?
Oh wow, you just summed up the last 2 years of my life. Basically, what we did was we looked at all our favorite 4X games. Like we've been playing these since the dawn of them, and we basically built a real-time 4X with prototypes of all the key features and started playing it. And they're like, okay, this doesn't fit. There's no way this will, you know, we're going to have enough time to do this. And then a lot of the time, somebody would come up with a great idea like, well, what if we did it in this new way? You know, maybe this would capture the same feeling of it and we could keep it in there and it would work in real time.
Can you give us an example of something you couldn't fit in that's like a typical 4X feature that you couldn't get in?
Oh, we're still trying to get them in there. But one of the key ones that we really want to get back in there is custom ship design. We went through about three or four iterations of this. We just kept simplifying it until basically what we have are custom or predefined ships that you select upgrades for and whatnot. But if you wanted to get something at the level of detail that is in Galactic Civilizations 2, we just couldn't do it in real time. It took too much time, and players would just get lost in there, and they wouldn't be fighting and building up their planets and whatnot.
Yeah, so instead you've got the three factions, the Traitor Emergency Coalition, the Vasari aliens, and the Advent like cyborgs. Is that they are?
They're still humans, but they've enhanced themselves with technology and drugs and various cybernetic things to get their psionic powers to their full potential. But they're still humans.
Right. And like all the factions are, they've got similar ship lineups, but they've got a lot of different, like the research trees are all different. The abilities of the capital ships are all different. What's your favorite faction to play as and why?
Well, probably the Traitor Emergency Coalition. In any given game, I tend to go for the more human faction and the underdog, the humans who are getting invaded by the aliens and they have to fight back and overcome great odds. That's just from a lore and emotional point of view. But from a gameplay point of view, I also like that they have a lot of crude weapons like nukes and they get the extra radiation bomb and they fire big swarms of missiles and they're really good at trade because I love seeing the little trade ships flying back and forth amongst the planets and doing their drop-offs and all that sort of stuff. It's just something that really hits home for me because I guess they're the closest thing to home that we have in the game.
And what are the advantages of the other two sides? The TEC has trade as they're the Traitor Emergency Coalition, so that makes total sense. But what do the Vasari and Advent have going for them?
The Vasari, well, they're an ancient civilization, so a lot of their base technology is a lot more powerful. And the way that people move around in space in the Sins universe is through phase space, and they've had a lot more time to develop this technology so they can get things like phase stabilizers so they can jump around the map once they've got these built. And that's really important for them because their units are fewer but stronger, but they need to be able to move them around to defend multiple locations because they can't afford the numbers that the other factions can. The great thing about the Advent is they have this Psytech or technology-empowered psionics, and all their special abilities and various weapons are all based on this idea, and it's just so unique compared to the other guys. And the other thing they're really good at is culture, which is another mechanic in Sins. It's a passive way of boosting your economy and influencing other planets, taking them over and whatnot. And obviously because of their Sonic background, they're very good at this sort of thing.
So you've got these three factions there's the intro movie that sets up the story, but once you get into the game, there really isn't much of a story to go on, because it's a 4X game, so you start with one planet and just expand out from there and make your own story. Were you planning to do a story and that just kind of didn't fit in the end, or I mean, are you planning to do one after release, or do you just think it's better to have freeform like this?
Oh, that's a big question. First of all, there isn't a playthrough story in the game, but we do have extensive lore built up, like as part of our design documents and all that sort of thing, and we are working right now on a very innovative take on how a story campaign could be done in an RTS / 4X. The main reason, and there are many reasons, that it's not in Sins 1 is we felt we couldn't put the necessary time and resources into it that it deserved. We were already moving in so many different new directions with the Sins base game, like the sandbox style classic 4X expand, make your own story, that we couldn't put the same level of detail into the story campaign. They both would have suffered.
Right, so it is a hugely ambitious game.
Yeah,
especially for... Sorry.
There's just too much new stuff, and we couldn't do it in both directions. But
yeah,
that's
especially for an independent studio.
Yeah, it was. We bit off quite a bit.
And this is Ironclad's first game, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is our first title, and we hope to hope it makes a good impression so that we can make more.
You've got some experience behind the team, though. I guess you got guys that worked on Homeworld Cataclysm and a couple other games.
Yeah, Treasure Planet, Battle at Procyon, and a few of us worked on Bully, which is a title by Rockstar. We were in the early stages of that, and we also worked on a number of titles that I'm not allowed to speak about due to confidentiality agreements.
Right. So you're not rank amateurs. That's what I'm trying to get across here. You've got some know-how on your team.
Yeah, we did still start in the basement.
So one of the things about Sins is that it does take a long, long time to play a game, much like a 4X game. I guess if you play on fast and you've just got two players, you can get it done in an hour or so. But I've been playing a few multiplayer games that have gone like 3-4 hours with just four players. What's the longest multiplayer game that you guys have played so far?
The longest multiplayer game? Oh, wow. Probably a weekend plus. I mean,
wow.
We basically would play all day, save it, start up again the next day, save it, and then, you know, go for another half day or something.
Yeah, that's one thing that's really cool about it is the save game system. I don't know if I've seen a game that's as smooth with saving a multiplayer game, letting people rejoin, and then going back at it. When another thing that's really great about that is if somebody does have a computer problem, is disconnected or crashes or anything, it's auto-saving, so you can just reload from the last point and resume.
Absolutely. In fact, we weren't originally planning to even have that in the game. We just had it in there for debugging because we had to be able to track these errors that would only come up after 3 hours of play. So we had to be able to go back, you know, just a few minutes and reload that. And then
so,
the beta
so it just turned out, yeah, turned out that people didn't want to spend 7 hours in a sitting.
Exactly.
And it's fun, don't get me wrong. And actually, I have sat almost that long and played it for the review, but but wow, it's I did not get bored of it over 7 hours. So it is a fun game, but you know, for most people, you're not going to have that much time to spend on it at a time. So you want to be able to break it up like that, and it's really yeah. really cool the way the save game system works. Yeah. so I had a brief message board discussion with you about the way you made the ships work in battle, because I guess the main thing was like you decided to have all the ships that are bigger than a fighter basically sit still and just slug it out, which, I mean, like having watched a bunch of Star Trek and stuff. Yeah. Oh, by default. Is there a way to change that?
Absolutely. Well, I often have my ships moving during combat for strategic for tactical purposes.
Right. So if you're micromanaging them, you can move them exactly. around, but they're not maneuvering on their own because you know like I'm a big Star Trek fan and I watched like a bunch of the battles in Deep Space Nine and you know Star Wars and things like that where you know smaller ships are maneuvering around on their own and you know just jockeying for position and evading and things like that. But all the ships here are pretty much holding still unless you move them. And I guess that's for purposes of making the battles easier to manage?
Well, there's two reasons. Actually, there's three. One of them is to make it easier to manage. The thing with Sins is it's possible you've got multiple battles going on all over the galaxy with lots of ships, and if you've got them going all over like that, it just becomes a great big mess, and you can't tell where things were when you last looked at the battle, and they tend to fly all around into this chaotic swarm, and it's ugly, it's not very user interface friendly, and so it just didn't make sense. The other reason is a lore reason. The ships are big. Like even the small frigates, if you look at them closely, zoom right in on them, you see the size of the windows. Those are not the kind of ships that would be, you know, swarming around like fighters and whatnot. They're little behemoths, you know, the capital ships are even way bigger than that, so they're obviously not going to be doing that. Just didn't make sense to us from right. both perspectives.
Now, the other thing I found pretty cool was the way you're using shield mitigation to prevent, like, everybody, like an entire fleet of 100 ships focusing on one ship at a time and just moving from one ship to the next ship to the next ship, and that just doesn't look very cool. I mean, it doesn't look like a space battle you'd see in the movies.
It's not.
Yeah, everybody's shooting at everybody, and you know their beams flying everywhere. It looks much cooler. So when you play a lot of RTSs, you get a lot of benefit out of just selecting your whole group and targeting one ship at a time. So can you explain how shield mitigation works and how that resolves that problem?
Yeah, absolutely. Because shield mitigation, I should say what it does. What happens is when you shoot at a ship, the shield mitigation increases in power, which means that more and more of the incoming damage per second is being absorbed into the ether. It's not doing anything. So if you focus fire all your damage output on a single ship, you're throwing away a good percentage of it. Whereas the enemy who's distributing his firepower, every point of damage is actually having an impact. So you do not want to focus fire. You want to distribute it out to minimize that penalty.
On the other hand, once you've knocked down the shields, then you can focus fire, right?
Actually, we changed that. Not the case anymore. We made two small changes. When the shields go down, the mitigation is still in effect. It's effectively wrapping the hull, but it can't extend beyond. And the other change is that as capital ships get more and more powerful, their shield mitigation goes up. This is one of the most depressing things for me and the rest of the team was to have a level 10 capital ship go down to a swarm of lights. It's just depressing.
Yeah, that's another thing we should cover is that the RPG aspects of the capital ship or the capital ships that you get with experience, they level up and they get to choose new abilities and you know use new powers in battle. And I guess they also get more durable as it goes on. Is that something you took from any particular source of inspiration, like in fiction or in other games?
Obviously, Warcraft 3. We're huge fans of that game, and the idea of adding these abilities to the ships was genius, and I always guess that's our tribute to them, and we love it.
Yeah, it gets you much more attached to the ships too, and you get really you know worked up if one of them gets destroyed in a battle. That
because
they're like I've had it happen many times where I'm trying to get away from you know I bit off more than I could chew in a battle, and I'm trying to get my high level capital ship out of there, and he's about to phase jump out of the system out of the planetary gravity well, and he's like down to his last legs, and there are fighters attacking him, and he just barely makes it out. It's a lot of fun.
I love the suspense of, is he going to make the jump? Is he going to make the jump? That's probably one of my favorite moments in the game is when he actually makes a jump with 10 hit points left or something.
Yep. So looking at your forums for at sensitiveasolarempire.com, you've been extraordinarily, like, you go out and talk to all the fans of the game, and you've got people in the beta that pre-ordered it, and you've just been going out and talking to them and telling them all kinds of stuff about the game and taking their feedback and actually implementing it into the game. How come, like, more developers don't engage their communities like this?
Probably because they want to sleep.
You don't have that problem.
I don't know. It takes a lot of time, but personally, I think it's a lot of fun, and it's worth it. I mean, the game is just so much better because of it, and because of these guys. They're amazing. They're fun to hang around with, and I can't imagine developing without them.
What's a fan suggestion a feature or tweak that has made the game a lot better?
Oh man, let's see. Being able to pin things to the Empire tree.
You've got that whole your whole side menu that keeps track of like the contents of all your fleets, all your planets, everything that's going on in your vast empire. You can see at a glance in this one menu. How does the pinning work? Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, what it is you can select anything in your empire, and if you hit pin, it adds it to that left sidebar so that you can keep track of it no matter where your camera is, no matter what you're focused on, and no matter what you're doing, you'll see it over there. So, for example, I'll often pin my home world where my key factories are, and I'll pin the leader of my main fleet so I can keep an eye on my homeworld, keep an eye on my fleet. And the idea of pinning it there was a beta tester suggestion, and I can't imagine the Empire tree without it.
Yeah. So you've gone with Stardock as a publisher. They're the developer and publisher of Galactic Civilizations and Galactic Civilizations 2. They have a policy of putting no copy protection on their games, which you know, legitimate gamers, you know, people who buy their games, we all love it just because, you know, we're not being punished for what, you know, criminals do. And like things like BioShock, there was all that blowback against you know, an otherwise great game where they had just this crippling copy protection. And on the other hand, you are running a bit of a risk there. Do you have that you know, you won't sell as much as you would have if you would put copy protection on there? Do you have any feelings on that one way or the other?
I think we'll sell more copies. I agree with Stardock's philosophy that we shouldn't treat customers like potential criminals. I think it's just fundamentally wrong, and I'm willing to, you know, stake my game on it, basically. I'm willing to bet that more people will buy it because there's no DRM.
Yeah, we're all rooting for you there. So after release, like, you know, once it's out and about, and you've got you've got more stuff planned for it to keep adding to it. I know you've got more maps that are coming. Are you planning on continuing to patch in new features?
Oh, for sure. Between the beta testers and all our own ideas and Stardock's ideas, there's an incredible wealth of features and just new systems and new content that we want to add to Sins. And the engine is set up such that it's pretty easy for us to put this stuff in. Originally it was designed to make it mod friendly, but it turns out that it's going to be easy for us to add free content.
Yes, it seems like a good way to you know, allow yourselves and everybody else to add to the game. And I've seen a lot of support for modders that are just looking at the beta and kind of salivating at the chance to add their own stuff in there. I'm pretty excited because I've seen some of my favorite modders from Homeworld and Star Trek Bridge Commander eyeing it and playing around with it. Looking forward to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, I've been following them. they don't even have the tools yet.
Yeah, and they're doing some impressive stuff already.
Yeah,
I've seen like a Super Star Destroyer in there. That's
oh man, cool. I saw that picture. I think it was on the Warlords page, and I was just like, oh man, that looks awesome. So it was like twice the length of the planet or something. It was just so cool.
Yeah. So one other little side question here. That you've got these pirates in the game that you can bribe to attack your enemies. But I noticed the designs of those ships, like a lot of them look like the TEC, but they've got kind of like spiky things and like extra glowy bits and things like that. Is that by any chance like a reference to Firefly or Serenity and the Reavers in there? Because they do a very similar thing.
Possibly. It wasn't explicit, and I don't recall it coming up at all. That was an independent decision, possibly influenced by Firefly, which we've all watched. But
I suspect you've got some Firefly fans in the art department. It's yeah. a very similar idea.
But it's not as explicit as, say, the abilities that we borrowed from Warcraft 3 for the capital ships. Like, we'd admit it if it was intentional.
Right. All right, Blair. Well, we've got to wrap this up, but it's been great talking to you, and we hope to have you back on the show sometime. Maybe if you've got a big update planned, you can let us know about it.
No problem.
So thanks for your time, and we'll see you later.
Thank you very much.
And we're back. Thank you very much, Dan. That was an enlightening interview.
Wasn't it, though?
I guess we should take some mail. First of all, so since we've been criticized for never reading any of the email that we've received, I do have an email. This one's for Jeremy, so I'm going to read it real quick.
Oh.
And before we go to our audio email, or I'm sorry, audio voicemail.
Yeah.
Hello, PC Gamer. Love the podcast and magazine. I am also a podcaster and currently use Audacity to edit. You mentioned that you use Sony Vegas. The link you provide on your website brings up three different products. Can you by chance tell me specifically which editing software you use? Thank you very much, Kathy.
Oh, hi, Kathy. Yeah, Audacity is pretty bottom of the barrel in terms of multi-track editing. It'll get a job done, but it's a pain in the butt. So check out Vegas. The one I use is actually Sony Vegas. It's also the most expensive, but it's also a hardcore video editor. So if you ever want to get into that, it's there for you. But it started life as an audio multi-track editor. So it's great at that. Absolutely fantastic.
So Jeremy, how many different tracks do you use?
Sometimes I had five in OXM's 100th episode. And that's the thing, is that the stripped-down version of Vegas, which I think is called Sony Movie Studio, is $89, and it only allows you to have four tracks. So if you're happy with four, and to be honest, you could probably get along fine with four.
I don't even understand.
Fine.
Like, what's on each track? What's going on?
Well, for instance, I have the vocals on one track because I have a different EQ setting for those. I have the music on another track. The censoring sometimes I put on another track. And if there's some other random stuff, like they wanted a compilation of their old shows, which had already been compressed and EQ'd, so I had that on a fourth track. And then you just mix them all together, volume envelopes and all different kinds of stuff.
So, Jeremy, with all that technology, how come you can't make me sound better?
It's not magic.
Are you getting complaints?
Oh, yeah, actually, okay,
well,
so on the board.
By the source material.
What? On the boards, apparently, people think that I sound like Dan. I either sound like Dan or I sound like Fraser Crane.
Well, Norm and I sound alike, according to most people.
Yeah.
Where are they getting Fraser Crane from?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
They said Fraser
Chuck
Crane
has
a Delta Pompous accent.
Yeah. I was going to say, Chuck doesn't really have that accent, so I don't know where that's coming from. But Kelsey Grammer has a great voice. He's Sideshow Bob. That's a compliment.
Yeah, he's got this deep tenor voice.
No, nothing wrong with that.
I'm listening.
There you go. It's closer.
Hello, readers.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you say, I'm going to kill you, Bart Simpson? Yeah.
I'm going to kill you, Bart Simpson.
That was a terrible Sideshow Bob, but whatever.
I'm sorry. I wasn't really going for it. I was going more for Kelsey Grammer.
Okay.
Let me just throw out a quick plug for this Mac program, which I know is kind of the wrong podcast, but it's called Ubercaster. Just Google that. If you want to do podcasts and you have a Mac, that's the program you want. I would love to get into it, but it's my last day, so.
So you just can't be bothered.
I can't be bothered at this point in time.
He's already
that
checked out.
That was inspiring. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess, Jeremy, this is your last chance to like really tell us what you really, really think about all of us.
No, I'm going to be working around the corner.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. we could actually hit you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Tom from San Francisco again. I like listening to you guys talk about video game politics, so I'll start the conversation for you. What's one of the few things Obama, Clinton, and Romney see eye to eye on? Federal intervention in regulating violent video games. I've always thought censoring freedom of speech was the job of the conservative right-wing politicians, but now the two most popular Democratic candidates want to spit on the First Amendment. It seems like no matter who wins, us gamers will be screwed. Thank God for the Supreme Court. Please discuss.
Yeah, the Supreme Court.
That's the first time I ever heard thank God for the Supreme Court.
You know, I've actually never seen anything on Obama about video games. He seems to be much more tolerant of them.
It's like the question of video game violence doesn't come up a lot in the debate, so I never really heard him talk about it.
Right. I mean, I know Clinton is against it, which is why she's never getting my vote. I mean, she proposed that Family Entertainment Protection Act, which was clearly unconstitutional from the get-go, and either she knew it from the start and was just completely insincere about it, or she was incompetent and didn't know that it was going to be unconstitutional. And either way, I don't want her for president.
I tend to think, though, that the only reason she was doing some of that stuff was just to kind of build up her, you know, her family-friendly cred.
And make her a little bit more electable
with certain segments.
I'm sure that's why she was doing it, but it's completely insincere and wasting taxpayer money. If it had passed, if it had been passed through Congress, it would have taken up all kinds of taxpayer money to strike it down as unconstitutional. And the fact that it didn't, it was killed in committee, it still wasted the Congress's time on making her look good, which is not really what I'm interested in. And I'm not sure. Does anybody know what Romney's position is?
I do not.
I heard something about him being much more like censorship friendly.
Okay, here's an interview with Barack Obama talking where he was directly asked the question, to which Obama replied, quote, "We need to give parents the tools, the information they need to make choices about what programs their children are watching or what video games they are playing. As we move towards a digital environment, there is a golden opportunity for the industry to do this on their own, to use the latest technology to give parents more information and more choice. For example, this technology could make it possible for parents to create their own family tier just by programming their television to block certain channels." Well, they already do that, don't they?
Vista has that built in as well.
"The same can be said of video games, especially as we're moving into an era where they can be downloaded as easily as today's movies and television shows. I would call upon the video game industry to give parents better information about programs and video games by improving their voluntary rating system we currently have. Broadcasters and video game producers should take it upon themselves to improve this system to include easier to find and easier to understand descriptions of exactly what the kind of content is included. But if the industry fails to act, then my administration would. And even if the industry does do some responsible self-policing, there is still a role for the federal government to play. We need to understand the impact of these new media better. That's why I supported federal funding to study the impact of video games on children's cognitive development." That's Barack Obama on video games.
Right.
Well, you know, those key words, take it upon yourselves. That's very, very good advice. If publishers and developers are really feel antagonized about all this attention, you know what? Stop handing guns for these people to go shoot with. Show some effort to make it difficult for kids to pick up M-rated games. I don't see a huge effort behind that. Has it improved recently in the last 10 years? Absolutely it has. But they've got to show more that they're more interested in keeping these M-rated games out of kids' hands, because we all know how easy it is to get them.
I want to restore value so children are protected from a societal cesspool of filth, pornography, and perversion.
I propose that we enforce our
obscenity laws again, and that we get serious against those retailers that sell adult video games that are filled with violence, and that we go after these retailers. I just
moved into that cesspool.
So Logan, the problem that I have with what you just said is that right now on TV, I will watch commercials for, you know, the incredible unrated edition that shows more boobies, shows whatever, you know, the version you couldn't see in theaters for so many different movies, and yet they're on the shelves at Best Buy, at any retailer, and anyone can just go in and buy one. It's not like those are being checked the same way that video games are expected to be checked.
Well, right. But these are two different industries. I mean, we're not talking about the movie industry, you know. We can't use that as an excuse to do nothing and to pretend like we're victims.
Well, you can because there it's a double standard. I mean, if the movies and music and books aren't held to the same
Is it really a double standard?
It is totally a double standard.
Games are much more interactive.
So what?
There are a lot of parents out there who aren't saying so what, and it's that kind of attitude that makes them feel like the federal government has to step in and provide some responsibility in the absence of responsibility.
It is a parent's prerogative to you know think that interactivity is going to harm their children, and they don't have to allow the children to play it. That's why the ESRB rating
system that's just bull. It's hard to keep it out of kids' hands.
It isn't part of the problem, though, that people are just assuming that any game is for a kid, whereas they don't assume that movies, television, or books are for kids.
That's what I made the point on Game Theory this week.
I'm reading the John Edwards stuff here, and he's actually seems to be quite well informed. He's talking about M-rated games and how and different studies that talk about how easy it is for kids to get their hands on games that are meant for people 17 or older. Like, he seems pretty clued in. I just keep coming back to this Romney quote, which just terrifies me.
Yeah, I'm looking for something on John McCain.
I can't even tell you how much fun I've had in that cesspool.
I think these interviews were done back before McCain became viable.
Okay. I'm on theissues.org here for John McCain. He says saying parents need clear, constant information about entertainment products, McCain proposed a uniform labeling system on all movies, video games, and music products, which is nice because it's a uniform standard. It's not a double standard.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. The 21st Century Media Responsibility Act amends the Cigarette Labeling Act to apply warning label requirements to violent media products. Quote, "Our children are vulnerable to images of violence. We need to help parents better determine the violent content of entertainment products by giving them information." That's a reasonable position.
That sounds perfectly reasonable.
I like that idea of a uniform system because part of the problem is that a lot of parents, while they understand movie ratings very well, they're not as well educated about the video game ratings. So if you just totally overhauled the system so that you only had to know one system for everything. I mean, I don't know how viable it really is, but it seems like that would go a long way towards this big issue of making sure parents are better educated about what's what.
One more thing about Barack Obama's position is he does say that it's a great time for the industry to self-regulate. But then he goes on to say that there's a place for government in there. I don't agree with that, but his position and on the Democratic side is certainly much better than Hillary Clinton's, and John McCain's on the Republican side is certainly much better than
Out of all of them, Barack Obama just seems like the guy that you're most likely to find on Xbox Live. I don't know why. He just
Well, because he's younger than the rest.
Yeah, that's true. It is a generational thing.
You could probably come up with a really good gamer tag. That should be a contest for this. What would Barack Obama's gamer tag be?
Well, what were you saying earlier today, Dan, that he's still paying off his school loans?
Yeah, I just read that he's 3 years away from paying off his college loans. So, I
guess he's got a whole bus. Sure, it's not a small loan.
Yeah, probably not.
All right, so let's do playlists now. Logan, what have you been playing?
Oh, I've been finishing Hitman Blood Money to wash the horrible taste of that awful movie out of my mind. Did anyone else see it? What a disaster! Oh, my God.
Really?
That bad? The Hitman wasn't even... He was good. I thought he was fine. What's going on? What is... And they have to kind of make him sympathetic, you know? So that takes away from his kind of steeliness and all that. It's just ridiculous. I couldn't figure out what the
Well, going they on. Make him somewhat sympathetic in the games too. I mean, he's not just an evil person in the games.
Yeah, yeah.
He only goes after bad people and blah blah blah. So the question is, Logan, have you finished it yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, on the last mission, you get to kill our publisher.
Dun dun dun. Oh, I know about that.
Oh, tough mission too.
It's a very tough mission.
Yeah.
So, Dan, what have you been playing?
Norm and I have been playing Sins of the Solar Empire like crazy last couple nights. I guess we didn't play last night, but the previous two nights we were up until the wee hours of the morning playing just on and on. That game does go on, but it's
playing Sins of Solar Empire.
Yeah,
it really is a lot of fun.
Norm, have you been playing anything else besides Sins of the Solar Empire?
Yeah, I played a game called Conflict in IDOPS for review all yesterday, but mostly Sins. Oh my god, that game is so good.
Really?
It's just engrossing because you get to manage your entire empire in real time, and like every you know science fiction universe you've ever wanted, like where there's a big fleet of ships you ever wanted to play around in that and you know control. And you can have multiple fleets moving all over the map, and it's very strategic. You have to think things out. It's
strategic. Plus, like the investment we put into it. Like we played for like a 3.5 hour game, and we didn't finish, but we're making a huge comeback, and we knew we were going to win. But just investing so much time in one game, and then coming out victorious, coming back from being you know slaughtered, nearly beaten, was just very satisfying.
We were getting our butts kicked. Can we do a quick recap? We were getting our butts kicked in the beginning because I had been playing for a while in the beta, so I kind of knew the ins and outs of the game, and the other two guys knew that. So they kind of concentrated on me. They kept sending the pirates after me by just putting a really high bounty on my head. So pirates kept coming after me and weakening me, and then they took away one of the planets that was supplying all my metal, and there are three resources in the game: metal, crystal, and money. So I didn't have any metal to build ships with. So Norm was kind of holding his own, but you know the other guy was encroaching on him a bit. The guy closest to me was weaker. So we had Norm take his fleet through a wormhole, pop out on the other side of the map. Behind the defenses of the weaker guy, wipe out all of his stuff. Norm was getting his like his planets taken out by the stronger guy in the other team, but we recolonized Norm where the guy that he killed was. So then we got back on our feet and were cleaning up. It was a fantastic comeback. And all the while Norm was keeping them busy, I was getting back on my feet, building up a big enough fleet. Oh, it was beautiful.
There was a lot of getting
super
back
nerdy.
On your feet.
Yeah, did a lot you, of standing up.
Did you catch that?
my eyes glazed over about halfway through it.
Typical,
sorry, Dan.
Typical.
I'm sure it was a brilliant game.
Typical Stapleton RTS recap. I need some theme music for those.
There needs to be a cable channel.
Yeah.
How about a lullaby?
So, Gary, are you still playing Burnout Paradise?
Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun playing it, particularly online. I'm waiting for Jeremy to finally get around to unwrapping his copy so that he can come online and we can race around.
I actually have a copy now, too, so at some point I'm going to try it out just because you...
All right, then I'll have to get a copy, too, then. I'll buy one today.
Everybody get a copy, and we'll have some PC Gamer free burn sessions. It's a lot of fun. But my big discovery this week was on Xbox Live Arcade, Res HD.
Yeah,
is just absolutely fantastic. Came out yesterday, in fact, and I've just been playing it nonstop. And it came out on PlayStation 2 and Dreamcast about 5-6 years ago, and was largely overlooked because it's a little bit odd. But it had a cult following, and now they finally brought out kind of an HD. Version of it on Xbox Live, and it is absolutely fantastic. Like, where has this game been all my life? I love it, love it, love it, love it to death. If you have Xbox Live, then go grab it right now. It's an amazing game, and I'm loving every minute of it. I'm in love with Res.
Are you really not playing anything on your PC?
No, there's nothing worth playing right now.
Cut the mic.
Crisis was supposed to be my big thing, and I gave it a shot.
Jeremy, cut his mic. Cut his mic.
That's what they said.
Recommend something for me.
Sins of the Solar Empire or... It will be in 4 days. Norm, what's a shooter recommendation that Gary's going to like?
Doesn't have to be a shooter. Try other games as well.
Yeah, if he doesn't like Crysis, I'm tapped.
Call of Duty 4 multiplayer.
I liked the single player. If I'm going to play, I think I'll just go back to Team Fortress 2. When are those new maps coming out?
Next month.
Okay.
There was one new map released this week, this past week. CTF. Well.
Okay. I'm gonna get back into Team Fortress 2. I think I'm gonna playing on that.
Play on our server.
Yeah.
You gotta be careful saying there's no good games to play on this podcast because that's what I said in 2005, and one of the early episodes, and it led directly to a WoW addiction.
I'm not going. I'm not that desperate. I'm not going back to until Lich King comes out, and that's not more until the end of the year. So I'm good until I think like November. I'll get back into Team. Are you guys still playing Team Fortress 2?
Some. Yeah. I haven't been in there for a little while just because Sins has been eating all my time.
Is Sins of the Solar Empire supposed to be good? Because it's got a really cool name, but I know nothing about it.
It is. If you like strategy games and if you like Homeworld and you like Risk, you'll love Sins of the Solar Empire.
I liked Homeworld. Is that what it's like? Is it in space?
It's like Homeworld. It is a bit like Homeworld, yeah.
Yeah, like, I was looking over their shoulder. It looked like Homeworld, like, to the 10th degree because it's so huge.
But you're also
Homeworld
a big,
and Risk.
You're a big Elite fan, aren't you, Gaz?
Love Elite.
Isn't it? That's the original 4X game.
Yeah.
How do I obtain a copy? Are they doing like digital downloads of it?
They are. Go to sinsofasolarempire.com.
It's not going to be on Steam?
No, they're doing it through Stardock's totalgaming.net.
No DRM.
That means
no
I have
DRM
to pay
at all.
So, Jeremy, what are you playing?
Oh, I got nothing for you. I'm playing the Get Your House and Life in Order game.
I guess you have to pack and everything.
I did one of those sell your stuff on eBay things where I took 12 items to one of those shops and they sell it for you for a cut. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting experience. We'll see how that turns out.
Jeremy, are you like me when you move where your computer is like the last thing that you pack up and then the first thing that you unpack?
Oh, yeah. Has to be.
Yeah.
Well, and then let's see. For myself, I finally converted to the iPhone. So I've been playing with a lot of stuff. With that,
he refuses to jailbreak
it.
To jailbreak it thus far, but I've been busy just like putting all sorts of stuff on there. And you know, there's so much stuff that you can put on your iPhone. It's amazing. They've got these like free broadcasts that you can put. You know, that are made for like iPods and iPhones that you can put on there. I'm not sure what they're called.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, but they're amazing. I mean, you can listen to these things.
And it's a better it's really life. Cool.
And let's see, what else? So the other day I was going to play some Team Fortress 2, so I set up Steam to update everything. Then I found out that Steam now has Puzzle Quest on it. And so, of course, I had to start a Puzzle Quest because I love Puzzle Quest, and then I ended up playing Puzzle Quest. That didn't work out too well. Otherwise, let's see. I went over to CompUSA, took advantage of the big sales that are going on right now. Picked up a like a $10 copy of Resident Evil for the DS, which is really funny because it's the same exact game that came out 10 years ago, even with all the bad voiceovers, just put on DS. So now you can relive some really really terrible acting.
Wait, which game is this?
Resident Evil. The Deadly Silence for the DS.
Since you are the master of unlocking.
I am. That's exactly right. I'm playing as Jill, the master of unlocking, who doesn't carry her own lockpick for some reason. Which is strange, since she is the master of unlocking.
I always liked it when he said, there's no reason to stay here any longer than necessary. It's like, right, that's why it wouldn't be necessary.
Okay.
Well, anyway, I guess that's about it for us this week. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for making my last podcast one of such epic and stunning quality, guys.
Oh.
We're definitely going to miss you, Jeremy. And I don't know who will be taking your role, but
yeah, nobody
they definitely won't
this
be able to
This doesn't seem to have quite the same emotional tinge to it that we had on Game Theory this week. Jeremy's last Game Theory was a very emotional affair, and there's something slightly sterile about this. I'm not really feeling... Not really feeling a lot of emotion from you guys.
These are hardened PC gamers.
You want us to cry?
I'd
like to see some feeling.
See Jeremy a lot more now.
What do you guys get for lunch?
Look at it from our point of view. We're going to be seeing Jeremy every day.
Yeah, we're going to be sick of him. The question is, what does RoboGaz have to say about Jeremy's departure?
Well, strangely good.
I think
for those stirring words.
How much money do you think I've made over the years on these podcasts, Gary?
$300 million.
Whoa. No. Wow. Oh, way off.
I think RoboGaz should clarify that.
I want to clarify that.
And on that note, I think we should end. this final episode of Jeremy Williams podcast.
That's right. And by the way, guys, the PC Gamer podcast, of all the podcasts I do, between us, it's my very favorite show. From the bottom
you
of
said
heart.
That on said all that the other podcasts, everything. Didn't you?
Now, don't ruin the moment.
Well, we were the first.
That's right. Next, PC.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, everyone. If you'd like to subscribe to PC Gamer, go to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe. To email us a question in text or audio format, you should go to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Send an email to that address. Jeremy, would you, for the very last time, would you tell us the telephone number in which to send questions?
All right.
We're going to have to write this down.
Write this down, guys. It's 877-404-1337, extension 724. That's PCG.
Rated T for teen.
Sierra Entertainment proudly presents World in Conflict, the most intense strategy game ever created. 5 out of 5. Easily one of the best gaming experiences of 2007. GameSpy.com. 9.5 out of 10. GameSpot.com Editor's Choice. A PC Gamer Editor's Choice Award winner, 93%. IGN.com's 94% Editor's Choice. War is coming home. World in Conflict. Available now for the PC.
This is the problem. I'm too good a person for my own good. This is what happens. I already bought my girlfriend a bunch of for Christmas, and then like at the last minute, she wasn't angling for a present. She was just talking about how she really liked the new iPod Nano. So I kind of bought it on an impulse and gave it to her as like an extra Christmas present.
Uh-huh.
And now they just released a new pink Nano for Valentine's Day, and I'm sitting here going like, oh, what am I going to get my girlfriend for Valentine's Day? And I could have got this if I hadn't already bought it for her as an extra Christmas present.
So you're too good a person?
Sometimes being too good a person can backfire.
Yeah. Wouldn't the too good a person actually just come up with a new present for Valentine's Day?
Ooh. Well, yeah, I'm going to have to do that. I'm just saying that by being... I have, in a way, been punished for being too nice of a person.
At Christmas.
So next time, just say you'll get what you get and you're going to like it.
Oh, Chuck, we do have to make a couple of corrections from last week.
Yeah, I know. Why don't we... We'll start with that. That'll be your section, Dan. But just pretend that that part of the podcast from last week was a dream sequence. Just erase it in your memory.
And then there was another one, which I blame Norm on for this one.
Norm, what just happened? God.
We just lost
what?
Gaz.
Wait.
We just lost Gaz.
That's all right. It's all right. It's all right. We have a replacement. Gary, are you there?
No,
yes, yes.
Oh, good. Oh, he is there. Thank heavens.
Ow.
Let's get right into it.
are you going to call chips. Back in, Jeremy?
Oh, right. I only have two hands. Hold on.
Or we could just continue with Robo-Gary.
Hold on. Where'd he go?
What do you think of that, Robo-Gary?
Oh, right. Hold on.
Yes,
Robo-Gary?
Yes.
Yeah, Robo-Gary is not very quick on the draw.
Was that just me?
Yeah, you dropped. I don't know why.
Right in the middle of Dan talking, it just suddenly went to like white noise, and I couldn't do anything.
Actually, not on our end.
It sounded like white noise here, too.
We heard lots from you while you were away.
Doesn't
probably always get depressed for that.
What? Two people were talking. I couldn't hear anybody.
I like the idea of a uniform violence.
One person at a time, please.
Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast.
Cheers, everybody.
Keep an eye on that one. That's going places.
Oh, okay, this is going to sound like it's just, you know, like... I forget what it is. Sucking up or whatever.
You hear that beautiful noise? It means we've got our producer, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
You have enough recordings to fake you.
I take your point, but that would be a sad, sad day.
Yeah, usually Jeremy adds all that mojo later.
We're going to have to leave at a mystery for now. So, I'm Jeremy Williams. We thank you for listening. And, yeah, I don't think we need to say much more than that.